welcome your Backup Plan tribe to another awesome, awesome series of shows that we have for you this week. I am so happy, beyond excited, to have you dive into the Heart of Talking to Boo with Tina podcast, and it's brought to you by your Backup Plan team. And we have an incredible team here at your Backup Plan, and we do shows once or twice a week talking about real life stories with their real life events, just like today's event. And I'm so excited to bring you Battling the Demons Within, a survivor's story of childhood abuse and self-esteem recovery. That's what we like to talk about, getting over the terrible episode that might be in our story, and how Navi Bliss, coming to us from Toronto, Canada today, is going to talk to us about her wonderful, wonderful story of, incredible story of what happened, which wasn't so nice, but how she is helping others today. And I'm so excited to bring her on our show today. So stay tuned, and we will be right back.
In the blink of an eye, life can change dramatically. On our podcast, Talking Taboo with Tina, we delve into these life-altering events with celebrities, authors, and everyday people just like you. You'll also discover your Backup Plan app, a life organizing tool designed to prepare you for any unexpected circumstance. It's your safety net, taking the sting out of tragedy. Imagine a plan B that ensures your finances are safe, even in the worst case scenario. But it doesn't end there. Join our vibrant Facebook group for free webinars on backup planning and secure your future today.
We're back with Navi Bliss coming from Toronto, Canada. Welcome, welcome, Navi. Now, Navi is, let me get my information correct. She is a love and confidence coach, an inspirational speaker, an author, and a podcaster. And what a childhood abuse story she's going to bring you all. I am so thrilled to have you here, Navi. Thank you for coming on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. You didn't have any demons that you battled with, did you?
Yeah, I think everybody that is in an occupation where they are helping other people, it stems from their own things that they've been through that has really, really inspired them to want to desire to help people that have gone through the things that they've gone through in their lives.
Isn't that the truth? It's so healing. It's healing to me, and I'm sure it's healing to you to know that you're helping those out there that, you know, where you could have used the help at the time too. Where did it all start for you, Navi?
So for me, it started in my childhood. So I have a mother who was physically and emotionally abusive towards me. And, you know, sometimes people, they remember a time that they had self-esteem and then they lost it. I never had it to begin with, because every single day my mother would tell me that I was worthless, I was unattractive, I was fat, every horrible thing you could imagine. And I grew up feeling like I was worthless and just wanting to be loved and accepted. That was my whole life. Every single day, all I wanted was to be loved and accepted. And I was willing to do anything I needed to do to be better. And I tried this. It started with my mom, right? It was always, okay, like if I'm smart enough, maybe if I lose enough weight, or maybe if I'm accomplished enough, or in any way, that then she'll see me, then she'll love me. And of course that didn't happen, because that is not it. When it comes to an abuser, you're never going to do anything to change their behavior.
Was it just you and her, Navi?
No. So my dad is a classic avoidant personality, and he was not an abuser, but he also did not do anything to prevent the abuse. And his way to deal with it was just to go to work and work extremely long hours and not be there, and allowed it to happen.
Yeah. I think that's really the, Was she narcissistic too, do you think?
I'm sure, and I'm sure that there is like mental illness there. There's probably a lot of different things that I'll never know about because these aren't things that she wants to work through or acknowledge in her life.
Yeah, absolutely. They don't. They don't see anything wrong with them themselves. And it's always somebody else, right? That's what you find. When did you first notice you feeling this way? When you started changing as a woman, or did you realize it sooner?
Oh no, these were my earliest memories that I have as a child. It just wasn't that love, that care just wasn't there. It wasn't as bad when I was very young because my parents lived with my grandparents and my grandmother became like the primary person that took care of me when I was an infant, because as soon as my mom brought me home from the hospital, she was not interested in caring for me. And that like level of resentment started right from the beginning.
What gave you that thought? Why did you think that that's what happened? What was that, what they told you, or?
I mean, that's what they told me, but that's also what I knew, right? So I've gone through hypnosis, and that's some of the treatment that I've done, like myself, to overcome the things that I've overcome. And even my earliest memories are of my mom, like as an infant, that I was able to connect with through hypnosis, were just her being unkind to me, being abusive to me, right from the beginning.
What do you remember the worst scenario? What age were you? What happened? Do you recall the most extreme issue that happened?
So I don't know if there was one thing that stands out to me that was so extreme. It's just that it was every day, that it was like every single day there, even if there were moments that it's like, I felt good in myself, right? Okay. So this is maybe 5 years old and I'm getting ready to go to ballet and I put on my tutu and I'm excited to go to ballet. And, you know, I come out and she's telling me that I'm fat and that I shouldn't be doing ballet and I have no right to be wearing that, and just like laying it on me. And it just that was constant throughout my whole life. It was exactly like that.
How do you think that made you feel at that young age? Because I mean, when we're younger, we have feelings and things like that, but we don't really understand what pretty and ugly really is or anything like that. So how do you think that really made you feel?
It just made me feel like there was something wrong with me, right? I always had this awareness that other mothers, other parents did not treat their children that way. And it just, so it made me feel like there was something inherently wrong with me. Not that I shouldn't be treated that way, but
yeah,
as a child, you believe that you deserve that. And so you must be doing something wrong. There must be something inherently wrong with you. Otherwise, someone wouldn't be treating you that way.
I know. And especially as a young kid, you really don't know. You really have no idea. I mean, we don't even really recognize races, different races, or we might recognize a certain culture. Maybe if we went to a friend's house and, you know, realize, oh, they do things differently there than what we do at home, or, you know, something along that line, or they eat differently than we do. But other than that, I don't think as children we really realize things. But moving forward in your relationship, how did that affect you as you became a teenager then?
Well, it just put me in this place where I wanted love and validation, and I wanted it so badly in my life, right? And I wasn't getting it. I wasn't getting it from my mom, and I wasn't getting it from my dad either, right? So this is now, as I thought, okay, I need to find this in a relationship. And my entire life, my mom had told me, no one's ever going to love you. No one's ever going to want to be with you. And as a teenager, that pushed me to want to just get into a relationship and find a boy that was going to love me and choose me And I did. I met my first husband when I was 17. And we got married when we were 23. And I remember when he chose me and he wanted to get married to me, I thought, okay, now all of my problems are over, because somebody loves me, somebody is choosing me, somebody is validating me. They're proving all of the things that my mother said about me to be wrong, and all of my problems are over now. And I felt like, even though that relationship wasn't ideal, I idealized it so much because it was just so much better than I'd ever experienced in my entire life. And I thought that that was the end of my problems. But you can't outsource your self-worth to another person. It doesn't work. And 2 years into our marriage, he had a child with somebody else while we were still married. And that caused my self-esteem to go to an even lower point than it had been before, which I didn't even think was possible. So say self-worth had been at a negative 100 before. Now it went to negative 200, because instead of proving my mom to be wrong, he proved her to be right, that I wasn't lovable. I wasn't worth being in a relationship with, and I wasn't enough. And that put me in a place where I felt even lower. I'd never felt that low. And I didn't even, and at that, when I was growing up, I never thought, okay, like I thought when I get older and when I can leave and get away from my mother, it's going to get better. And I realized, no, when I put my self-worth in someone else's hands, and I give that away, I give my worth and power to that person, and they don't show up for me in the way that I thought that they would, it was demolished.
Oh, betrayal's got to be like one of the top things. Was it hidden? Of course, this affair that he had, it was hidden for a long, long time.
It was a wild story. So he was in the Navy, and there would be times that he was away, and but this wasn't even somebody that was away. This was somebody that lived in the same city that we did. How I found out about it is, I went shopping. We went shopping that day, both of us together, because we were supposed to go to a friend's housewarming party. I went into a store, and then he said that he didn't want to go into that store because it was boring, and he was going to bring the car around. And then I got into the store, and I'm looking around, and then I didn't realize, because I didn't have my wallet with me, and I didn't like think about it, because at that point, this is not how I do relationships now, but all of our finances, everything was combined. So I didn't, you know, I didn't think about bringing separate money or whatever. So I came out of the store, and I was waiting for him, and about 10 minutes passed and he wasn't there. And so I went back in and I walked around, and I thought, okay, maybe he's just taking a bit longer. Then I came out again and I waited for another 10-15 minutes, and I didn't see him. And so this is a very small mall that we were at. I lived in Victoria, BC at the time. And then I walked around to the other side, and he wasn't there. And again, this parking lot was very small. I would have seen him if he was bringing the car around. And so I came back and I sat outside for another half hour or so. And then like now it's been well over an hour. And then I started bawling because I realized that he left me there. Oh. And I was in utter shock because, you know, this was my husband. This wasn't, you know, some man that I just met that I'd been dating for a few weeks or something like that. This was my husband, and I didn't have my cell phone, and I didn't have my wallet, and I was just absolutely mortified. So I cried and I walked home, which was about 10 kilometers, and I didn't have
without my house anything, because you had no money either. So
The only saving grace was at our house, is we had two big dogs at the time, so we never used to lock our back door. So I was able to climb over the fence and get into the house from the back door. And then when I got home, I was so upset that, of course, I started calling his cell phone and left messages with a lot of expletives in them because I was furious, right? And this is also hours later at this point. And then at some point, he calls me back, maybe, I don't know, an hour after that, and tells me that he was waiting at the mall the whole time and he tried calling my cell phone and that I was crazy. And because I was crazy, he was leaving me, and that I was in this, right? So then I start to wonder, was he there? Am I losing it? And then I ended up calling my best friend, and her husband at the time was best friends with my husband. And she's like, okay, she's like, no, she's like, something is very fishy here. Like, let me figure out what's going on and I'll call you back. And in that time, my husband came and he packed up some of his things. And while he was in the house packing up some of his things, I went out to the car and I realized my cell phone was sitting on the seat. So I immediately realized, okay, I'm being gaslit. Like, so I'm still questioning my reality, but I'm like, okay, this, if you try to call my phone, it's right here. So I grabbed it and then he left. And then my friend was able to let me know that what had happened is he'd gotten someone else pregnant and he'd left me at the mall because she called him and said that she was having the baby. And so he went to the hospital and he left me there. And that was how I found out about that. And, of course, like, you know, several days later, he came back and tried to pretend that it didn't happen and did not want to end the marriage. But of course, at that point, there was no way, like, even as low as I felt, there was no way, because I would rather be alone and feel like garbage than be with somebody who made me question my actual reality and made me feel like I was a crazy person.
Especially moving forward. Because, you know, if it happened now, it's going to happen again. I guess that's what we're always thinking, right?
Yeah. And also, I mean, for him, when he finally, like, I mean, it's not like our marriage immediately ended. And there's obviously like a time of disintegration where all of these things are happening. But eventually, when he realized that I knew the truth and he couldn't hide it, what he said to me is, you know, well, I love you, I don't love her. And that was just, you know, that was just sex. And I realized, okay, this is somebody who does not have the same idea of marriage as I do, because, and so this isn't going to change.
Yeah. Boy, you've had to become really strong all the way through after all you've been through.
Yeah. And I mean, after that, what that led me to is, because my self-esteem was in an even lower place, that led me to even worse relationships after the fact. And I ended up in two domestic violence relationships back to back. So with my ex-husband, it wasn't a good relationship, but I wouldn't say that it was abusive. I mean, there was betrayal. He cheated on me. And there was gaslighting right at the end of it. But through the course of the relationship, I would just generally say it was a toxic relationship. But it wasn't abusive. But then when I got into an abusive relationship, I knew that that didn't feel good and it didn't feel right. But my own self-worth was so low. And society puts value on people being in partnership. And especially, like, you know, there's something wrong with being a single woman, right? Like, from society's perspective. And because my self-worth was so low, I felt better having a partner than I did being alone, even though I knew I wasn't being treated well. But how I justified it in my mind is the abuse wasn't as bad as what I grew up with. So it wasn't really abuse, right? So it wasn't physical in the beginning. And then, so I thought, okay, because that isn't happening, it's not really abuse. It's not as bad as the way that my mother treated me. So maybe it's okay. That's how I justified it, right? And of course, it got worse and it escalated. And then after 5.5 years, I managed to get out of the first relationship. And of course, I left that. And I immediately jumped into another relationship. And that was also an abusive relationship. And that one was even worse than the one before. And again, I was still trying to justify it. And I also had this shame and embarrassment because, you know, I saw friends, other people in my lives, like settle down with partners and get into healthy relationships. So I felt shame around not having a healthy relationship. So I felt the need to pretend that it was healthy so I could cover up that shame because I didn't have that sense of worth on my own. And then I had this sense of shame that, again, if my relationships aren't working out, it's my fault. It's up to me. But then I had a moment of grace where I was able to leave that relationship. And anyone that's ever been in a domestic violence relationship, they know that the most dangerous time in a domestic violence relationship is when you try to leave, because that is the most dangerous time. And that had happened in the previous relationship because he took a butcher knife to my car and slashed my tires. And it was I'd seen like escalating violence, like to get a restraining order. I went through a lot with that. And this was a moment when he went to another continent, and I had an opportunity to exit that relationship. And I took it because, you know, how I had felt inside of that relationship, in both of those relationships, is there was like, at first it started, there's like this tiny little whisper of a voice that said, this is not okay. This isn't how love is supposed to feel. And then by the end of it, it was that voice was screaming at me saying, this is not how love is supposed to feel. And I just realized, okay, I would rather be alone, and this can't ever, ever happen to me again. I hit my wall. That voice got so loud inside of me. And when I hit my wall, I was like, okay, I need to do whatever I need to do to figure this out. And if that means I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life, I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life, because I cannot be treated like this again. And I realized also that, like, the stuff that had happened with my mom in my childhood, it wasn't okay and it wasn't my fault. But now I was an adult and I was choosing what I was allowing into my life, and I was allowing these people into my life. And if I couldn't figure out what the problem was and how to choose better and to have someone better in my life, that I was actually better off being alone. And in that healing journey, it was like transformative. It included therapy, it included coaching. And what I realized is all of this love that I was seeking outside of me the entire time, I had the capacity to give it to myself, that I could actually wake up and I could feel good in my own skin every single day. I did not know that that was possible up until that point. And through that, I also ended up finding my passion and purpose for helping other people, because I know that the biggest reason that people struggle in relationships, that they tolerate bad behavior, that they end up in these situations, is because of this lack of self-worth, and they just want love and validation. But when you can give that to yourself, you don't need that. But then also that when you can step into your authenticity, when you step into your power, that is also when you become an effortless magnet for all of the things that you want in your life. You don't need them. You're not chasing them, but they come to you anyway.
I think that's so true. And you only see that after the fact, after you see all the puzzle pieces kind of filtering into each other. But when you're actually in it, it's so tough to first to comprehend what's happening to you at the moment. Secondly, I'll give you an example. You had a husband who left you at the mall, which was super weird. Like, that's super weird. Like, what was he thinking? Like, could he have not found a different way of going to the hospital secretively? Like, that just brought up red flags all over it. It's like, where is he? What's he doing? Like, why is he not picking me up? Right? Well, I had a similar instance after almost 30 years of marriage, where we're in Vegas at a softball tournament, and I had been asked by one of the other coaches that were at the tournament if I had the medical papers for his girls on the team. And I said, yeah, I do, but they're up in the room, so I have to go up and get them. So I turned to my husband, because I know how strong and fine-tuned he is to the time that you need to go to these tournaments. Like, he likes to be early. So I said, do we have time for me to run up and get these papers? And he said, yeah, just hurry up, because we're going to be waiting here at the lobby. I said, okay. So I ran up to the room and came back down, and everybody's gone. Everybody is gone. And I walk outside the doors, and I'm looking at the parking lot, and I see my girlfriend, who's one of the other girls on the team's moms. And she says, I jumped out of the car, Tina. He was really mad, and he drove off. And I said, let me out of the car. Don't leave Tina here by herself. And I'll stay with her. And he left. Who leaves someone that they love, supposedly, in a parking lot, not even knowing where to go to this tournament and how to get there? Who does that? So it's kind of like the same kind of thing, like leaving. If you were dating someone, you would definitely not do that.
I mean, how I think about it is now is, one, when somebody is in that situation where, like, they're in their fight or flight mode, it doesn't make it okay, but that is, they don't, like, there is no rational thought. But what I realize is also that was a gift to me from the universe, because had that not happened, had, you know, he could have left and said that he was going to work or that he got some call or whatever, and I wouldn't have known. Like, he could have driven me home and all of that, and I wouldn't have known, and I would have stayed in a situation that I did not need to stay in longer, for a longer period of time. So that was a gift to me from the universe, because it was a terrible way to, like, face that reality, but it shook me and it made me uncomfortable enough that I had to face that reality. And sometimes that's what happens. And if I look back in my life now, because of the place that I'm in and all of the work that I've done, so many things make sense to me, right? And I don't have this hatred or resentment even towards my ex-husband, because I've done this healing, because I believe that he played an integral part in my journey, because I needed to cut off the relationship with my mother and I needed to step away from her.
Yeah.
Getting married to him was the first step to be able to do that, right? Because I needed someone to take me away from that situation. So he did that. So that took me away. It wasn't that it was taking me to a healthy place, but it was still a better place than what was before, right? But I also would have, out of loyalty, out of fear, out of so many things, would have just stayed with him had something major not happened to shake me up and to shake me out of it. So then he went and did all of that, which woke me up and shook me out of it and forced me to leave. And if I think about my life now, and of course it wasn't smooth, because after that it still got more complicated, right? But all of the things that I've accomplished, the person that I am, the life that I have now, which I love so much, I would not have that had he not done that, had the things not happened in that way, because I would probably be stuck in a small town living a very small life with this man and trying to pretend that I was happy.
Yeah. What do you think other listeners listening to your story can resonate with? I would assume, after trying to I think women don't really want to leave. They want to think that it's not going on, you know, like you probably felt some of that. Like, they try to convince you, or they talk about it, or it's not going to happen again, or, you know, whatever it is. What can you tell listeners to look at, to consider, to think about your self-worth? Because that's the only way you can get out of a situation like that, is to think about yourself.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a matter of whether a relationship makes you happy or if it doesn't make you happy, right? And this is how you have to look at it, because being paranoid doesn't help. And if people aren't ready to leave relationships, like a lot of times I work with women and, you know, they're not ready, and that's okay. So you always start the work on yourself. And if you work on yourself, if you're in a relationship that has the potential to be better, that has the potential to be fixable, then as you do that work on yourself, that relationship will improve. Because if you change the way you're showing up, then the other person is going to change how they're reacting and responding to you, if they are capable of that, right? And if they are not capable of that, then they will not. So you don't have to make the decision to get up and leave in order to start changing things. If you want to work on your relationship, then start by working on yourself, because that will change your relationship and it will show you whether that person is capable or whether they're not capable. But as you start to build that love for yourself, as you start to build that foundation, you're not going to accept it anymore when that person isn't changing, when they're not working on themselves. And somebody who is healthy, who is open to growth, will be inspired by the work that you're doing on yourself. People aren't going to change because you try to change them, because you tell them to change. But if they have that capacity within them, they're going to feel inspired when they see you doing that work on yourself. And if they don't, then you're also going to learn that through doing that work on yourself, that, hey, I'm working on myself. I'm building my confidence. I'm working through my trauma. So I'm getting less triggered. I'm showing up in a better way. I'm learning how to communicate and express myself in a better way. And yet I'm still getting the same on the other side. That's when you know it's not you, that it's the other person, right? Because sometimes we can also be the problem when we've gone through trauma, and when we're showing up in a certain way. I know that the ways that I showed up in my marriage are definitely not the ways I show up in a relationship now, but I didn't have relationship skills, right?
No.
But even if I had built those relationship skills, my ex-husband's views of relationships and monogamy and all of those things, those are still his values. And I know as a person, because we're not friends, but we're friendly, so I know that those views for him have not changed, right? So that wouldn't have changed, that part. I couldn't, because he doesn't want that. That's who he is, and he's happy being that person, and he has the right to be that person.
Yeah, as long as he's not hurting anybody, he can be that person. And so what happened next, before we move on to the next part? Make sure you like, share, and subscribe down here below in the button. Press on the subscribe button if you'd like to see more of our shows. But and Navi's information is below in the description box. Just click on more and it will show up in your description box. That being said, let's talk about your first relationship after your marriage. So that ended up in domestic violence. So
that was my first long-term relationship after my marriage. So I would say my first way that I actually coped with leaving with my marriage is because I got married when I was so young. I got into that relationship when I was so young. I had very little experience with other people and then I felt so violated, because when that happened, I actually had to go get tested for STDs and all of that, because if he got someone else pregnant, that meant that he was being intimate with other people and not using protection. And that, you know, that created another level of shame for me.
Oh, yes.
To go through all of that, which it shouldn't have, but it did. It did create that shame for me. And so my way of sort of, I guess, dealing with that was to actually become very, very promiscuous, because I went from the opposite of having no experience to now rebelling, but also just like, I just wanted to feel something. And then that stopped when I realized, okay, this is just making me feel worse because I'm giving away pieces of myself to all of these people that I'm with, and giving away pieces of myself isn't making me feel more whole. It's just making me feel less and less and less.
Yeah. Where did it start with the violence part for you? What did you first notice? So that people can hear what you're talking about, maybe visualize, maybe that's what's happening in their own relationships.
It started with small insults, right? Like comments about my body, like just very, very unkind things, like pointing out like, oh, you have a role here, or what is this, or why do you look like this? Like not even just like, and making me feel like the way that my body looked was not normal.
Making you feel like your mom was telling you all along. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the universe was showing it to you again in different voice and a different body and saying, you haven't got it yet, Navi, we're going to give it to you again.
Yeah, exactly. And in those moments, knowing that it wasn't right. Right. And it showed up in controlling behaviors as well, right? Around what I was wearing, where I was going, and always being critical. Or when I went out, if I went out with him, if someone else was kind to me and complimented me, then that would turn into a fight with me because I was doing something wrong, or I was flirting with someone, even though when that wasn't happening, right? But just always feeling like I was in the wrong no matter what I did.
I think what I can say is I felt like I was walking on eggshells because I never knew when the next fight was going to be or when the next argument was going to be about. And so you always felt like you were walking on eggshells. And what did it get evolved to from the controlling, from the remarks and the insults? Did it get to be physical abuse as well, or to throwing things, or what?
Yeah, definitely throwing things. I would say like mildly physical, like compared to the actual physical violence that I experienced with my mother, it was a lot less, right? Again, that's how I justified it. But it definitely was something that was escalating. And then there was one fight, and it was just, and like, I didn't even think. So during this fight, he took a butcher knife and then he walked out of the house and he started attacking my car and slashed all the tires. It was so instinctual that I just picked up the phone and called the police, and then I immediately regretted it, but they came immediately. And the thing is, like I felt so bad and I wanted to take it back. And in that, I had so much guilt around that. But that also was like, they stepped in and they intervened, and then there was like a restraining order put in place. And I didn't want all of that at that time. But I remember the cops that came saying, it's so good that you called, because he was going to come back in and turn that knife on you. Like, we see this all of the time. And I didn't believe it. It took some time to like have some distance from it. And it took until I was actually willing to let go of that relationship to realize, because then it became a stalking situation, because he was not willing to let go of me, showing up at my house, showing up at my job. And it was he didn't love me. He didn't want to be kind to me. He didn't want to treat me well, but he also did not want me to be free. That was not going to be okay. And it took some bigger things legally happening for that to finally end.
Oh, that's a mess. That's hard. I'm sorry you've had to go through all of that. Now, the second one after that, the one following, is that it then? You've learned your lessons and you dealt with is that the worst of the worst, the third one?
Yeah, that was when I hit my wall and I was done. So it doesn't mean that I never went on a bad date or anything, because of course that's a different story, but it's just, I was not going to enter into another relationship because I learned okay, these are the things that I need to pay attention to. These are the things that I, as soon as I see these things, they're going to be absolutely unacceptable to me right off the bat. I'm not going to end up in this situation again. And the one thing I want to say is, like, how people also justify being in abusive relationships is every moment isn't terrible. There's great moments too, right? And it's usually oftentimes like after something terrible has happened, after they've been terrible to you, because they want to convince you to stay and they want to like gaslight you into believing that whatever happened didn't really happen. There's probably going to be, you're probably going to be showered in gifts. You're probably going to be showered in kindness and being told that they didn't really want to do that and that this is up to you to be treated better. And you're going to start to believe that, okay, maybe it actually isn't that bad, right? Every moment isn't going to be terrible. And it's like, I find this, especially with women, we want to cling on to those good moments. But the thing is, a normal, healthy relationship is going to have ups and downs, but they're not going to be, it's not going to be like a roller coaster ride. The ups and downs should feel more like little speed bumps that are happening in the way, because it shouldn't be that you're questioning who you are and your worth and your sanity. Like, those are not things that should be happening. They should be, okay, maybe I feel frustrated that my partner disagrees with me, or, you know, I don't like this thing that happened. It's not, I'm questioning every single thing about myself. That is not normal.
I think a lot of us don't really realize because you're stuck in it, and it just, they're such good manipulators and they're such good abusers that they really have it down to a fine art. And it is hard if you aren't up on that upper level of self-awareness, self-confident, self-esteem. I call it like, how do you be that bitch? That's what I always say, because I see these tough, bitchy women when I was in my relationship. And I think to myself, how come they don't get those men? How come they don't, you know, find these men that treat you wrong? And
I don't even think that it's necessary actually to be a bitch. Like, I feel like that's just a protection mechanism, because it's like, that isn't who I am now. Right. It's just that, now I'm in a relationship where my softness is like embraced. Right. That is like, I get to be as soft as I want to be, because I'm always safe within this relationship. Right. And I don't worry about, like, any relationship could end, and that is possible, that we could grow apart or things could happen, and that is a possibility. I recognize that possibility, but I don't question whether this person is going to turn on me, or whether they're going to harm me, or whether my personal safety is ever going to come into question. That is not something that I ever have to worry about.
Right. If they make you feel like you have to cry, if they make you feel worthless, if they give insults, I'm trying to name all the things. If they hurt you physically or just mentally, because also you might see them doing something as well. It's not to you, but you see it happening. That's, I don't know what that would be called. But all of these things are like little red flags that we should be more aware of and say, it doesn't have to be like that. And I think that's where we finally realize that the light bulb moment happens. Otherwise, we just keeps going.
I think it's for every single person, you always have a voice inside of you. And there is that little voice inside of you that's telling you that things aren't okay, even if it's still a whisper right now. It's there, right? And what that voice is a part of you that actually knows that better is possible, because you could not have that voice if you did not know that better was possible. And everybody has that. And the more you lean into that voice, the more you tap into that voice, it will give you the courage. And all you need is a moment of courage, really, to be able to step out of a situation, and you're and things will start to change. Because what's going to happen is when you're in a relationship that is abusive, when you step out of that relationship, what's going to wash over you is relief. Yeah. And other things, sadness, of course, loss, all of these things, but it's relief. And when you feel like you can finally breathe, because being in an abusive relationship is feeling like you're holding your breath the whole time. And when you finally take that deep breath, mm-hmm. that is what's going to keep you going, even because you would rather be experiencing the sadness, the loss, the grief, whatever you're also experiencing in addition, because you had that while you were holding your breath anyway. So you would rather be able to breathe through whatever pain you're going through. And that's what's going to help you
get through it
and move past yeah. it, and move towards your healing.
Yeah, absolutely. What about trying to get out of these relationships and trying to find your, because we talk about having a backup plan. And it's all fine and dandy to have a backup plan when you're two sweet people in a loving, happy relationship. That's all, the best scenario. But what happens when you have to find your crap and get out safely?
Yeah. And a lot of times it's like there's a moment and it's like, you know, people have to leave, like women that, like, you know, this is like very, very disproportionately affects women. And that is because men are the physically stronger sex. That is just a truth that exists. Right. And so women are in greater physical danger around men. So you like, I had a moment of grace, and this was a gift from the universe. Like I said, when my partner was in another continent, that I had the ability to leave that relationship. Not everybody has that. Sometimes it's just a moment, right? Like they're gone to the store and you realize, okay, this is it, that I got to run, and you don't have time to get anything or to take anything. And this is where you had every document, everything in one place that you could access, because so many women end up at shelters or places, they don't even have their driver's license. They don't have their insurance. They don't have anything.
Their passports, anything.
Even the basic things that they would need to be able to buy a job, buy a plane ticket, buy a train ticket, do anything at all. They don't have any of that. And that's also what keeps people stuck. That keeps women stuck, because they don't know how they're going to, and they're fully reliant on the shelter, the legal system, somebody stepping in to be able to help them. And if you have all of your documents in one place, that would of course make your life a lot easier to know, okay, I'm already dealing with all of this. That is the one thing that I don't have to worry about.
That's for sure. Because boy, oh boy, when the time comes, you have to make a quick decision. And you know the time is going to come at some point. It's just trying to find it and to be ready. So that's awesome. Thank you for adding that. What kind of, where has it brought you to now with what you're doing? And I understand you're helping with the love and confidence coaching, and you've written a book. Tell us about that and what's coming up.
Yeah, so I'm absolutely passionate about helping people to fully fall in love with themselves, because I believe that this is the basis for everything that you want in your life. And this makes you the magnetic, radiant person that can attract all of those things in. And so I'm passionate about helping people to call in their soulmate, to improve their relationship, because also not every relationship that isn't going well is an abusive relationship. Sometimes it's your own garbage and it's your own trauma that you have to work through. And working on yourself is going to improve that relationship, right? Because even if it starts out great, your own trauma and triggers can really destroy a good relationship.
Yes.
So passionate about helping people to create the love that they want, whether that's calling in a new relationship, improving on the relationship that they're already in. But also when you step into your most powerful, magnetic, radiant version, it also works the same way in your business. If you're an entrepreneur and you're a business owner, calling in your soulmate and calling in your soulmate client, it's the same energy, and it's you stepping into your power, stepping into your radiance. And in my book, which is coming out in April, so I've co-authored two books in the past, but this is my first solo book that is coming out in April.
That's exciting.
I really dig into my journey, and it is called Broken to Blissful, How I Overcame Trauma and Created a Life That I Love. And in it, I share all of the different pieces of my story and all of the different things that I did. I share tools, all of the different resources that I used to pull myself out of the situations that I was in. And I really, really wanted to create this resource because I love helping people. I love working with people one-on-one. But I also have this big heart for philanthropy. And I know that not everyone has the resources to work one-on-one. So I wanted to create something that was a guide that someone could take away on their own, that is inexpensive because it's just the cost of a book. And you could use that to start to work on transforming and changing your own life and to know that it's possible because I did it, not because I'm more powerful or I'm more courageous or any of these things. I did it, and that means it's possible for anyone else that wants to do it too.
Well, that's lovely. That sounds like a great book to pick up. What kind of final message would you like to give the listeners, Navi?
The message that I want to leave people with is if you're listening to this and you're identifying with parts of this, a lot of times we can start to feel guilt and we can start to feel bad. And that's when you're, especially when you're in that cycle and really beat yourself up, but you don't know what you don't know until you know it, right? So if you're starting to recognize these signs, reach out for help, reach out for support. If you're unsure, there's so many hotlines and places available for support, but you can also send me a DM. And this isn't going, and I'm not, if you're questioning whether the relationship you're in might be domestic violence, if you're worried about that, I'm always open to have a conversation with somebody. And ultimately, I want everybody to know that they're worth it. And if you have gone through things or you've made bad decisions, that there is always more and better that is possible for you. And there's nothing that you can't recover from.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. I think I put your website is down below in the description box, as well as, I don't have a phone number or an email, but they can reach you at your website, right?
Yes.
Or on Instagram, message you, or Facebook.
Yeah.
And that's down below as well. Well, thank you so much, Navi. We could talk about this literally all afternoon because it's such a huge topic about people's self-worth and the relationships that they've been in, and moving forward, how to know the signs and figure out if it's for you or not. That's hard when you don't really know where you're at. So like you said, it's about working on yourself so that you can bring that part out into the next relationship. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Everybody, in the blink of an eye, something can happen to you, something life-changing, something that you didn't expect to have happen, and it just hits you, just like Navi talked about. And it could be a car accident. It could be a wildfire. It could be a hurricane. It could be something is going to happen to you at some time. We don't know when and we don't know what, but we do know that something will. So sometimes we're not given a 5-minute evacuation notice. Sometimes we're not given any time at all. And it's hard to make those right choices when, I always say, it's when something happens, it's like your brain just disappears. It leaves your body. You can see it floating in the air. It's like, give me that back. I can't think. You can't think. You go into fright mode and it just disappears. Your brain disappears. So if you had some of the information already done for yourself, it alleviates that pressure and that anxiety and the difficulties is so much. So make sure you like, share, and subscribe to our channel. Check out more shows. check out our app. Also, get some coaching sessions over on our free webinars on our Facebook group. I'd love to help you over there. We talk about family conversations. We talk about having what that's like, how to have fun with that. Talking about what you want in life. What do you want in death? It's all talking taboo with Tina. It's stuff we don't like to talk about. So that being said, thank you so much, Navi, for coming on our show. Thank you, everybody, for coming on our show and watching. I'd love to have you, as of course, always. And we want to make sure that you stay safe and be kind until next week when we see you again on our next show. Sending love. Bye for now.